Chapter 15. Its balloon-like bone-white outriggers buffeted by gusting winds, the airship moved swiftly over the devastated surface of Zonama Seacoat. Luke, Mara, Jason, and the Yuuzhan Vong priest, Harar, were crammed onto the rear portion of the gondola's tiny cabin. Saba Sabatine and a Faroan male named Krajb had the controls. Companion of the manta-shaped dirigible, elegance enshrined, Krajb had arrived in the middle distance only the previous day, but had agreed to accompany the Jedi on their mission to the Southern Realm. Next to the two pilots stood Jabitha, wrapped in a fur-lined cloak. At 3,000 meters, the air was frigid, and the howling wind made conversation difficult. Even if that hadn't been the case, no one seemed inclined to talk. Jason was broodingly silent. Mara, preoccupied and restless. Saba, at least, had a bewildering assortment of organiform control levers to busy her. Luke raised the cowl of his robe and shoved his hands deep into the robe's sleeves. The Force spoke quietly on Zonama Seacoat. The rain had finally ceased in that part of the planet, but the thick cloud cover remained. The sun, whatever star it was, named or unknown, was a broad smear of incandescence behind the gray veil. A persistent chill wind rustled the giant Boris and was fast stripping them of their globular leaves. Many of the leaves had turned blue and yellow as if bruised. Something seldom seen in the middle distance, except at high altitude. Vapors froze during the long nights, leaving the canyon floors covered in white until the sun rose. Thin sheets of transparent ice formed over quiet pockets of the still-swollen river. When glimpsed at all, animals could be seen seeking shelter in caves or burrows, or fashioning durable nests, as if in preparation for a long winter. Boris seeds, too, had been observed creeping off into the Tom Posse, perhaps to seek nourishment among the oldest of the iron-tipped Boris, and wait for the lightning strikes that would split and shape them. The Faroans rarely ventured out before midday, and then only for long enough to gather firewood or effect repairs to their cliffside dwellings. Most of them avoided the Jedi whenever possible, or, when not, exchanged few words. None, however, had issued further demands that Harar be turned over to them. Luke assumed that young Maid had allayed fears that the Yuuzhan Vong priest was a threat. He gazed through the cabin's aft windscreen at the wounds Zonama had suffered. Quakes had opened deep trenches in the savannas. Landslides had altered the course of rivers. Fires had ravaged vast tracts of Tom Posse. Luke had considered taking Jade Shadow up to survey and catalog the damages, perhaps attaining orbit for just long enough to survey the nearby stars as well. But he couldn't trust that the planet wouldn't jump into hyperspace again, as it had after its initial reversion to real space. Covertly, he looked at Jabitha, then at Harar. He couldn't recall a time when he had been so close to a Yuuzhan Vong and not engaged in fighting for his life, save perhaps on the occasions he had stood close to Noma Nor. But then, any moments spent with Noma Nor constituted a duel of sorts. For the 10th time since the airship journey had begun, Luke tried to see Harar in the Force, but perceived only an absence. Despite Vergere's assurances to the contrary, Harar, and by extension all Yuuzhan Vong, did not seem to exist in the Force. There the priest sat, not 3 meters away, and Luke couldn't sense him. Harar was nothing more or less than what he appeared to be. A tall, sinewy, human-like man, absent some of his fingers, and marked with tattoos, scars, and other modifications. Luke knew that he could use the Force to levitate Harar, to pirouette him about the small cabin, but he couldn't see him in the same way he could see Mara, Jason, Saba, and Jabitha, as a luminous being, not as the crude stuff of flesh and bone, but as an egg-shaped being of light. Vergere, who had willingly spent 50 years among the Yuuzhan Vong, had maintained that the seeming invisibility of the Yuuzhan Vong owed not to any inherent failure of the Force, but to the way Luke and his fellow Jedi perceived the Force. The implication was that they had somehow failed to grasp that the force was grander and far more reaching than they understood it to be. Luke could accept that. His training had been rushed, and with the deaths of Obi-Wan and Yoda, he had been obliged largely to pursue his own counsel and find his own way to mastery. He would have been the first to admit that his understanding of the Force might be limited or incomplete, that he had perhaps become more a master of the living Force than what the late Vergeer had called the unifying Force. But even that deficiency should not have prevented him from being able to see Harar. Either Vergeer had left something out of her lectures, which Luke wouldn't have put past her, or her own understanding of the quandary was incomplete. Luke didn't for a moment doubt that the Fosh Jedi had somehow succeeded in tutoring herself to a kind of mastery, despite having been forced to conceal her Jedi abilities from her captors. But the matter of the Yuuzhan Vong's invisibility ran deeper than Vergeer knew or had allowed. Perhaps she believed, as Yoda had at times, that her responsibility ended with setting Luke on the proper path. Perhaps that was the way among the Jedi of the Old Republic. For all the education and practice each had undergone, the achievement of mastery was ultimately the outcome of a personal quest for understanding. If any of the new Jedi Order grasped this on an intuitive level, it was Jason. Long before his re-education by Vergeer, some said re-indoctrination, Jason had sought to reach a personal understanding of the Force. In that, he was much like Leia, a knight in her own right, who had, for her own reasons, resisted taking up the path of the Jedi. It was Jason who had insisted that Harar accompany them on the journey Jabitha had proposed a day earlier, when she had visited Luke, Mara, and the others in the cliff dwelling. "Sikot is aging," Jabitha had said. "I feel her, and yet I feel estranged from her. She remains in exile to puzzle out what has happened. And in withdrawing, she neglects Zonama. I don't think she has done so deliberately. It is as if she has been abducted by dark forces and is somehow imprisoned." "Nom Anor, Nen Yim and I are responsible for what has happened to Sikot," Harar had said. "We should never have come here. If the gods haven't already turned their backs on the Yuuzhan Vong, they will now, for we have despoiled the living world." Jabitha had listened to the priest's confession without comment. She said, "I know where we can begin to seek Sikot, a place where the Force is strong." Harar seemed to feel Luke's eyes on him and turned. His own eyes were moist, and tears had left streaks on his tattooed cheeks. The cause might have been the wind rushing through cracks in the cabin. "I am overcome," he said sadly. "Even with all its recent injuries, this is the world I have dreamed of. The world all my people have dreamed of. The one that ordained our past. The one we prayed would prefigure our future. A world of symbiosis rather than competition and predation. The very world we have tried time and again to recreate, only to end up with facsimiles. It is no small wonder I felt nostalgic for this place the moment we landed, that I felt I'd arrived home, though I'd never been here." "If the Yuuzhan Vong evolved on a world like this," Luke said, "what turned you to war?" Harar took a moment to reply. "The ancient texts are unclear. It appears that we were invaded by a race that was more technological than animate. We called on the gods for protection, and they came to our aid, providing us with the knowledge we needed to convert our living resources to weapons. We defeated the threat, and, empowered by our victory, we gradually became conquerors of other species and civilizations." Jabitha interrupted, instructing Krajb to steer the airship southwest. The terrain grew more and more rugged. Jagged mountains of crushed lava rose steeply into the clouds. Braided tails of orange-tinted water plunged from the heights into thickly forested gorges. The wind blew fiercely, and the temperature began to fall below freezing. At Jabitha's direction, Krajb and Saba piloted the airship down toward the expansive talus field of a mountain that struck Luke as being younger than Ben and twice as unpredictable. "Here is where my father's fortress once stood," Jabitha explained, after the airship had been anchored to the denuded slope. Seacoat showed Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker a mental image of the fortress, as it was before the advent of the Far Outsiders. "The Far Outsiders have a name, Jabitha," Harar said. "It is the Yuuzhan Vong who toppled your father's fortress." "Of course," she said. "Old habits are not easily broken." Luke asked Saba to remain with Krajb in the airship. Then he and the rest emerged from the cabin and began to follow Jabitha uphill, fighting a cold, strong wind that swept down from the invisible summit. Luke saw the cave entrance before Jabitha drew everyone's attention to it. The air inside was warm and remarkably humid. The cave angled down into the mountainside, and Luke realized immediately that what they were in was actually an ancient lava tube. The floor was paved with coarse pebbles that crunched underfoot. Cooled magma from deep in the planet, the walls were composed of dense black stone, but in some places they glowed with a faint bioluminescence. "How like the interiors of our space vessels," Harar said. Luke could see the resemblance, but he was reminded of something entirely different. The cave on Dagobah that Yoda had dared him to enter. But while that place had been strong in the dark side, the lava tunnel felt enchanted, strangely maternal and enfolding. He began to sense the presence of the animating intelligence he had come to know during his short time on Zonama, the one helped to consciousness by the first magister, Lior Hal, who had also named the planet in the Faroan language, World of Body and Mind. Could this be another of Seacoat's tests? Mara wondered while they walked. "I don't think so," Luke said, "unless Seacoat is testing itself." "Stop there," the voice of Seacoat said, speaking through a suddenly transfixed Jabitha. "Who walks with you, Jedi Master? Two I recognize, but the third?" "He is called Harar," Luke said, not to Jabitha, but to the tunnel itself. "He came to Zonama in the company of the one who sabotaged you." Jabitha turned to Harar. "How is it I seem to know this one? My memories go back billions of turnings, and this one carries a message to me of distant times and distant events." "Harar is of the people you know as the Far Outsiders," Luke said. "The Yuuzhan Vong, who tried to conquer Zonama shortly before the arrival of Verger." Jabitha shook her head. "Those times are not distant, Jedi Master. But why can't I perceive him? Not as I do the children of the Firsts, not nearly as I do the Jedi. Yes, I recall having the same experience with the Far Outsiders. They seem to exist outside the Force." "No, Seacoat," Luke said. "Even though you can't perceive Harar, he exists within the Force." Jason's right hand went to his chest, as if to touch the scar left from the piece of slave coral Verger had implanted in him. He swung to Harar. "Why did the Yuuzhan Vong leave their home galaxy?" Harar firmed his scarred lips, then said, "Some have interpreted the ancient texts to suggest that we were banished." "For what reason?" Jason persisted. "Our infatuation with war and conquest. Some interpret our long journey as an attempt to win back the favor of the gods." Jason thought about it. "Your ancestors were banished because they turned to war. They did the opposite of what was expected of them. Did the gods banish you from the Force?" When Harar lifted his head, his face was a mask of fearful confusion. "There is nothing in our legends about the Force." "But even you compared the Force to your gods," Mara said. Luke took Harar by the shoulders, as if to shake him, but only eased him to his feet. "A power. Call it the gods if you have to, may have separated you from the original symbiosis. Your people experienced intolerable pain, and pain has been the only way back to that symbiosis. Harar nearly collapsed in Luke's grip. Separated from the symbiosis. From our primordial homeworld. Luke dropped his hands to his sides and turned in astonishment to Jabitha, as if waiting for Seacoat to confirm what he was thinking. I now understand, Seacoat said finally. This one, his people, has been stripped of the Force.